How's everybody doing on this Sunday afternoon? It is a football Sunday, but no local football being played. Eagles-Giants, we'll have to wait another day. Final game played of Week 14 will take place Monday night at Lincoln Financial Field. Though there are plenty of games, and I heard Rob Motti just rattle off some of the scores. Some good games being played out there. I'm always curious. Does anything grab your attention when your Philadelphia Eagles are not in action? And if so, what exactly are you drawn to that particular game? Or are we all watching the red zone just to get our football fix? Also, what are your expectations from the Eagles tomorrow night? We know the Giants will have Eli out there. We know the Giants only have two wins to speak of. We also know the Eagles are coming off that horrific game in Miami last week, and it was a no-nonsense week for Doug Peterson and his players. Put on the pads, all of that, and it says to me that there was a refocus, or more pay attention to detail so that we don't have another team wanting it more than us kind of attitude. And do you think it will be too little too late? I don't know. You have to run the table. Some think it is possible because you are looking at teams that certainly by record aren't anything that would blow you away, including the Dallas Cowboys. So we can get your take on what's happening tomorrow, but I am keeping you company until the Sixers and the Raptors, which is a game you can listen to right here on 97.5 The Fanatic, beginning at 6 o'clock. I love those early Sunday starts. It is a rematch, not only of last year's playoff series in round two, but really of November 25th, when Toronto beat the Sixers 101-96. They held Joel Embiid scoreless in 32 minutes. You may recall he was 0 of 11 from the field and 0 of 3 from the line. Embiid did not play last night because of a bruised left hip. Ben Simmons let it slip in the post game last night that he would be back in action tonight. And he was definitely not on the injury report that had to be in by 1 o'clock with the NBA. So Embiid in the starting lineup. My question to you, what will we get from Embiid tonight? Again, 0 of 11, 0 for 3 in that game up there in Toronto. Toronto plays him very well. Gasol gives him problems. But what will you expect from him? You might remember that the three games that followed his performance against Toronto, he got to the line for 44 free throw attempts, and he made 40 of them. And that just said to me, especially when he only had three that night against the Raptors, a more aggressive Embiid. He's been far better passing out of the double team. His teammates have been better in terms of the spacing. So one, what are we expecting from the big fella tonight? Two, what will Ben do to follow up his career scoring performance last night? Now again, no Embiid on the floor, and the Cavaliers look like they couldn't guard the best high school team we have in the area. They were so not interested in guarding, it was unbelievable. But put that aside, Ben had 34 points in 26 minutes of work. He did make a three-pointer in the corner. He did go to the line and attempt 12 free throws. And by the way, by making nine, he took his free throw percentage up on the season from 56 to 59. Still hasn't gotten over 60, but he did bring it up a notch. And after the game, we were talking about with Brett Brown, you know, what about Ben's performance did he like was the first point of attack. And his exact answer was when he is in that kind of attack mode, right? And you hear Devon say this a lot. The best Ben Simmons is the aggressive Ben Simmons. And so when he's coming downhill, I mean, this guy is 6'10", and he can finish, if he so chooses, finish at the rim. And if he doesn't finish, you gotta foul him. But he doesn't do this on a consistent basis. So when he was talking about the attack, I say, Brett, part of being in attack mode for Ben equaled his 12 foul shots. What is a reasonable number that we could want him to get to the line, given his talents, on a nightly basis? And he threw out 8. And in saying the 8 free throws, he also got into what he would like from Ben from three-point range. Tyler, can you please play Mr. Brett Brown for me?
This is what I want. Okay, you can pass this along to his agent, his family, and his friends, and to him. I want a 3-point shot a game minimum. The pull up twos, I'm fine with whatever he's open, but it's like I'm interested in the 3-point shot, and the mentality that he has where he's turning corners and taking that long step, that gather step, and bringing his shoulders to the rim and trying to dunk or finish tight will equal higher efficiency or getting fouled. That's the world that interests me the most, those two things.
And he went on to say, now what has happened, because it was a follow-up question, is that, yes, he does design plays. And part of why I'm bringing this up is because, and in fairness, we have discussed a lot here on this station, and especially when it comes off after a loss like they had in Washington or a loss like they had in Toronto, where Embiid and Simmons are these unbelievable young talents. Both have been to the All-Star game and will continue to go, probably. But on given nights, you only see that they are the same player that came here, you know, their rookie year in their own respects. And so what people then say, well, it's coaching. But in listening, that's what he wants. And he went on to say he does design plays that would get Ben a 3-pointer, but what he kind of respects is Ben will come back and say he saw something better and went in a different direction, and that it's a fine line because Ben does not want to make too big a deal out of this whole shooting 3-pointers. And so it was an interesting conversation and a very cordial conversation about what goes on between coach and one of his stars. Just for when he talks about the 8 free throws and he threw the number out, right, like boom, knee-jerk reaction. I think it's a good number because I'll tell you who gets there for 8 attempts per game on a nightly basis this year. James Harden, Giannis, Anthony Davis, Doncic, Jimmy Butler, and Joel Embiid. And those are aggressive, talented in their own rights, not all the same, not all similar. I think the important one there for me, is that Giannis shoots 59%. Actually, this says that's his field goal. I know he shoots 59% from the line. He does. 59% from the line. All those other guys are, Joel's actually the lowest of the rest of them at 81%. The rest of them are all high 80s, and Giannis shoots 59. But I'll take 59 when you're going to get there to the line for 11 attempts. It's aggressive. It's free. It'll give you 7 points on a given nightly basis if you shoot that percentage. And on nights, you're going to shoot better. 610-632-0975. So let's go back to this. Joel Embiid did not play well the last time he played against the Raptors. What will you expect out of him tonight? And he did not play last night because of the bruised left hip. Personally, I think even if he was feeling okay, it seemed to me it had been a while since he's had load management. He had played in back-to-back on 2 different occasions, 1 week apart. So I think he had a bruised hip, but I don't think it will slow him down tonight. What are you expecting out of Joel Embiid? And I hope, I don't know how you feel about this, but I hope he doesn't press too hard just to prove himself against Marc Gasol, because he was, you know, quite frankly, embarrassed in that last game. 0 for 11 in 32 minutes when you're 7-1. I mean, post yourself up and let's dunk on this guy. So, one, what is it, Joel Embiid? 2, will we see another 3-point attempt out of Ben Simmons? And how does he follow up that kind of performance? Because, you know, scoring a career high 34, he was incredibly efficient, and then getting to the line as well. It gives you the hint he can be aggressive. He can be aggressive, but it's on him. And why does he choose? I also thought last night, because he played a lot of Trey Burke before they played everybody in that fourth quarter, but a lot of Trey Burke, which allowed then, if you weren't out in the open floor, that Ben Simmons was posting people up, and that's another area. He's actually, in my opinion, his footwork and his moves in the low post seem more fluid than maybe sometimes a Joel Embiid. Now, Joel obviously has such a body, physique, and strength, but and I did ask Brett if that's a conscious effort. His when Embiid is out of the game, go posts Ben. And his first thought was always speed. Let's get out and run when there is no Joel. But yes, if you then get caught in a half-court game, the knowledge and knowing that you can post a Ben, and it was definitely something they did, and I thought he did pretty well. I don't know about the rest of you. Please weigh in. When he does his, I know Brett said he didn't care about those two-pointers, shots that he, jumpers that he's taken. The only thing I don't like, he never goes straight up. It's always falling back. You know, that was one of the great things about his three-pointer in the corner. Feet were set straight up, good stroke, no problem. But a lot of those other jumpers that he took last night, they're all fading away. Not only made them, because he had an unbelievable night from the floor. I believe he was 12 of 14, but I'm going off my head, so I'll double-check myself. And the other thing was they had eight turnovers, a season-low eight turnovers. Now, again, keep in mind, the Cavaliers defensively put up very little. But a couple days earlier, what cost them terribly in that loss in Washington was their turnovers. They had 21 as a group that led to 30 points, and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons had 15 combined. And then you can come back and take care of the ball and have eight. There's just, to me, there are hints that this team can be more efficient, can deliver a more consistent product than what we sometimes see. Now, I know they're 16-7 on the season, right? They have, I believe, won 9 of 11, and somehow we, and I'm included, find ourselves nitpicking at things. And I am correct. Ben Simmons was 12 of 14, 1 of 1 from 3, 9 of 12 at the line. He only had the 3 rebounds, but as a team, they shot 63%. So you're not getting a lot at the offensive end of the glass. And there were others who were contributing. Everybody was on the glass. Kyle O'Quinn led them with 11 boards total. But from the bench, they got 7 from James Ennis. They got 8 from Norvell Pell. Yeah, it was a good day for a lot of people. So that will be. And then my one other thing, Embiid is back in the lineup. But you still have no Josh Richardson. And so I say, now we'll see. I'm probably going to be wrong because Furkan Korkmaz and Mike Scott. Mike Scott made his first start of the game, first start of the season last night, to kind of jumpstart him because he had been struggling so much from a shooting perspective, and it worked. Mike Scott ends up going 9 of 12 in 24 minutes. He made 3 of 5 threes and finished with 21 points. Personally, I'd put Mike Scott out there to start this game. Now, you may, maybe Brett will say, you know, I like that punch from a defensive and scoring aspect coming off the bench. Me? The guy just got going last night. I'm going to let him keep going. I want him staying in that mode, and I would do it. But probably you're going to see Furkan out there. Furkan played 19 minutes. He was 2 of 5 from the floor, nothing spectacular, and finished with 5 points. So who would you like to see in terms of Furkan or Mike Scott to fill in for the Josh Richardson? Now, of course, Furkan is more of a perimeter shooter. No, he's not more of a perimeter shooter. Mike Scott is too, but you'd have to shuffle the lineup in terms of maybe sliding people if you wanted Mike Scott in there. But so many times I hear Brett say, you know, we have our perimeter guys and people are interchangeable. I just think the guy benefited from being in that starting lineup, and I wouldn't mind seeing it again tonight. And Furkan, while at times he's been good, I feel like he hasn't been what he once was earlier in the season from a shooting perspective. 610-632-0975. It is Sunday afternoon. There are no Eagles playing today. They will be playing tomorrow night. If you have thoughts about what you're expecting from them, please weigh in. I do appreciate it. Let's begin and check in with Dan from Delaware. Dan, thanks for calling 97.5 The Fanatic. How are you?
Hey, D. I'm doing good. And you?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I've been following you, you know, and the family, your dad and everything for a long time. And I know you guys know basketball.
Thank you.
And I was a big 76ers fan, a season ticket holder. I've seen a lot of games. And I'll tell you from just the beginning, I've never been a Brett Burns fan at all. I haven't, you know, seen the lack of some good coaches. I have never seen a pattern from his side. But I know this season, this is not all his fault. I'm not blaming most of the stuff. I mean, it's a really tight situation. From the point guard to everything. I know it's not an easy thing. But I think one of the major things I see here is, I have two questions, really, for you.
Sure.
One is Zaire Smith. How do you draft somebody at the first round pick last year? 2 years ago, with all the expectation, and this guy cannot even give us bench minutes. I mean, is that an indictment?
What player are you talking about?
I'm talking about Zaire Smith.
Oh, Zaire Smith. Sorry, I didn't hear who it was.
So my thing is, you know, is that an indictment on the coach or Etty Brown? What is that? Have you seen such thing before?
Oh, yeah. I could give you plenty of examples. But
I mean, this is a first-round pick, right?
Yeah. I could.
And can anyone give us a bench minute?
And Anthony Bennett was not only a first round pick for Cleveland; he was the number one overall, and played very. Excuse me.
He played.
I'll give you his numbers, but no, he was never a contributor ever. Ever, he tried many times, but no. So that would be one example, and that's the number one overall pick. I mean, Zaire was, I believe, 16th overall, I'm going to guess. But anyhow, to your point, I would say two things. One, as a rookie, he had an incredibly tough start to his season.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So with the surgery first, first was his injury. Then came surgery, the losing of, you know, 30 to 40 pounds.
Yeah.
And then trying to come back. So technically now would be his rookie year, in my opinion. I don't count last year for him. I think he was up against way too much adversity. My second thing would be that you are asking, they drafted a guy who they loved his athleticism, and that's okay. And they love his length and hope that one day he will be a really good perimeter defender. However, he played power forward in college and spent most of his time around the rim. And he wasn't asked to put the ball on the floor, and he wasn't really asked to shoot from the outside. And so now you're trying to grow his game from a perimeter standpoint. Yes.
Yep.
And my third point would be, this is a team that has championship aspirations. So their rotation is pretty tight, right? They go out and they got two key free agents, and I'm going to consider Tobias, even though he came partially last year, and I'm going to consider Al Horford, and actually it came in a trade, but I'll put Josh Richardson. So your starting five are, you know, boom, anybody else got pushed to the bench. Yep. And so even, you know, your guys that you drafted, it, you know, Evan Turner, I'll go back, he was on a decent Sixers team that went to, you know, a game seven in the second round with the Celtics. He was your second overall pick. Now, he got some minutes. I'm not saying that. But, you know, they weren't huge minutes. And so when you're on good teams, the minutes can be less for a guy, especially taken in the lower part of even a first round.
Yeah. One final question I have for you, please.
Sure.
Is, I'm having trouble with Brett Brown. I just really don't. I don't want to use the word like or hate. You know, he's a good guy, but when it comes to coaching, I just don't know what the thing is. But my question is his relationship with Brett Brown. I mean, with the point guard. What's his name?
Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons. I just think it also contributes to him his hesitance to shoot the ball to do some of the things that we expect. You know, maybe a different voice may help, but I don't know. I just want this team to be better. I just think that they should be able to dominate this division at least. And sometimes the shortcoming bothers me, and I just kind of attribute that to the coach. And perhaps things can change. I don't know. You know, what do you see for his relationship with Ben Simmons?
I will tell you what I see, and I appreciate the phone call, Dan. I see that a guy, and especially just looking last night and going to him specifying that, you know, shooting a three-pointer a game and eight free throws are good targets for this guy. And that Ben does not always want to do this because he thinks he sees something better from a team perspective. And so I think it's a pull in both directions with each trying to respect the other person and their thoughts on this. But I will say, Ben's a little stubborn and he seems, you know, when he wants to talk about, what are you complaining? I just scored 34 points. I was incredibly efficient. And, you know, I don't understand why this always has to be the topic. So that Brett has a relationship with him and his family, yes. But I don't think it's, I think he is invested in trying to grow this guy's game. And I think he sees such potential all the way around. And I think the fact that he has gotten him to play the defense that Ben Simmons is playing is enough for Brett to say, I'm going to get this other stuff to come along too. I got him to see what he can be defensively. And I think Brett believes he can get him to see who he can be from an all-around offensive standpoint eventually as well. So that's what I see. And in terms of dominating this division, first of all, I don't know how much you've watched Milwaukee, but they're really, really good. And I think the fact that you'll look and you'll see the Sixers in the fifth slot, but Boston, Toronto, Miami, and the Sixers all right now are clustered right there. I think over the next, you know, when the Sixers hit the road and go west during the holiday or, you know, for after Christmas, that we'll have a better idea. We'll know exactly what you're dealing with. And I think eventually something's going to shake out with that group of all being so tightly clustered. And it'll probably be because of, you know, the competition that they're playing. And the Sixers have some challenging games coming up, beginning today when they take on the Raptors, a team that is the defending champs, but few people think that they're for real. And I read a really, really good column today that would suggest they are for real. 610-632-0975. Will Ben shoot a three today? Will JoJo have a field goal today? Will the Sixers continue to be undefeated at home? You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Fanatic.
This weekend's programming is brought to you by Commonwealth Charter Academy. Does the idea of your child returning to their classroom after winter break seem unthinkable? Commonwealth Charter Academy can help. Visit ccaeducate.me. So we've been talking about the Sixers because they're in a back-to-back situation. They will host the Toronto Raptors, who were in Philadelphia last night. I was thinking about it. I wonder if you get together as a team and you watch them play that Cavaliers. They might have said, all right, enough is enough when they were up 41 at the half over the Cavs. But they had no Joel Embiid. They had a very dominant Ben Simmons. And by the way, by the end of the day, the Sixers, who were obviously scoring 141 points, certainly helped with this. But they shared the basketball amazingly. They had 43 assists and only 8 turns. And the only reason I do bring it up is because, yes, with a big lead like that, you say, well, of course. Well, no, not of course, because a lot of times that gets sloppier because you're running up and down and it becomes like, you know, pickup basketball that you play at the nearby park. But they had 43 assists, and only 8 turns. Everybody was in on sharing the basketball. Everybody. 610-632-0975. Will we see Ben shoot another 3 tonight? His coach asked for 1. It's obviously what they've discussed. Ben wants to make sure it's in the flow of the game. But he had a good look yesterday, and he made it. So let's check in with Tom. Tom's in Newtown Square, and thanks for calling the Fanatic, Tom.
Hey, D, how are you?
I'm good.
A few months ago, you asked callers to call in and name their top 4 teams of chance to win the championship, and I was a surprising call when I said Flyers second, but really the dud of it was I picked Eagles first, and boy, does that look like an awful prediction when everybody thought the Flyers second was the awful prediction.
Well, the Flyers won, and I don't know about yesterday. I was saying there's a feel-good feeling to them, one, because I think people look and see that they are improving. 2, they have great goaltending, it would appear. And 3, that their coach has definitely put his fingerprints on their situation.
And that's why I picked him second at the time, because I thought he was the second best coach in Philly, where he may be the best coach in Philly now that Doug Peterson looks like a buffoon. But to Ben Simmons, I think the problem with the disconnect is, on one hand, Ben Simmons is obviously a very good player, but he came with the reputation he was going to be generational, transcendent. And after 3 years of playing and 4 years being under NBA coaching, I think it's fair to say that I don't think he'll ever be compared to Kobe, Durant, LeBron, and Shaq and other transcendent generational players. But he is a very good player. And it's kind of like the Eagles in the early 2000s, where people couldn't accept that Donovan wasn't Brady or Manning. And because the Eagles were knocking on the door so long, finishing in the NFC Conference Championship was no longer acceptable. Well, finishing as the 4th or 5th seed in what I call a dog NBA, meaning there's some really, really good teams, but if you're not a top 2 or 3 seed, does it really matter? Because there's just so many bad teams in the league. That's, I think, the problem. You know, they're not happy they're the 5th seed, especially with the expectations coming in. And some people just can't accept that or appreciate Ben Simmons for just being a good player. They'll feel it's a failure if he doesn't become a transcendent player, especially with this whole tanking and tanking to get the number 1 pick and the pain that all the fans went get to try to get a Ben Simmons. And now if he doesn't turn into, let's say, a Donick, that adds to the failure of the feeling.
Right. Well, first of all, I think there are actually better NBA teams in the league this year than you're giving credit. I think there's been some, like, for instance, Toronto's a good team, and most people would say they were going to be terrible without a Kawhi and a Danny Green.
But do you think realistically, Dee, and I'll, you know, you obviously know a lot more basketball than I do. Do you think there's realistically more than 4 teams? Like, if I made a bet with you and said, hey, you pick the top 4, I'll pick the top 4 teams, you get the field. I don't know of many people that would take the field. Where in other sports, hockey, baseball.
Right,
football,
okay, I see what you're saying. Well, in baseball, I don't think you used to do that, but all of a sudden now people would do it because of what Washington did.
Correct, and the wild card. And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, all right, that's fair because, I mean, I think they think the top 3, well, the 2 LA teams for sure.
Sure.
Milwaukee, you have to, though. I thought a guy sent something out on Twitter yesterday. I can't believe everybody's saying Milwaukee in the finals. They haven't been there in 45 years.
if Milwaukee kept Brogdon, and I kind of like Milwaukee because I like Giannis.
Oh, my
but
God.
But they were cheap, so they didn't keep Brogdon, and I thought Brogdon was their...
No, they did keep Brogdon. They got... Oh, no, he went to Indiana. I'm sorry, my bad.
Indiana, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
If they still had Brogdon instead of, let's say, Bledsoe or Wesley Matthews, I would probably say, hey, they're a legit 14. But without that, even though their record's great, I'd be surprised if they win it too. But unless Giannis turns into for a playoff series like Kawhi did, you never know.
Yeah, I won't go against them because they do get after it defensively.
Correct.
And so yeah. All right. Wait. So that we've established to the Ben part. If he made first team, or there is only one, if he made the all defensive team, does your opinion of him becoming transcendent change at all?
No, it doesn't, because transcendence to me, you know, there's a lot of great defensive players. Hey, I love defense. I'm a defense-first guy. But in the end, a transcendent player is someone that, and you could say in Game 7, could drop 50, could drop 60. Iverson, Jordan, Kobe, Durant, Shaq.
So you're attaching it strictly to the scoring end of it?
I hate to do that, but in the end, that's what great players are known. Put the team on the shoulders and carry you. And, hey, John Stockton, great all-defensive assist. But no one would ever compare John Stockton to Michael Jordan or Shaq or Kobe. And he was a great defensive guard. He would get racked up assists. I mean, how many times did he lead the league in assists? He wasn't like Steve Nash, but you still wouldn't put him there. And so that's what I mean. I wouldn't call John Stockton, as great of a player as he was, Hall of Famer, transcendent. Right? I wouldn't call him generational.
All right,
and
well
that's what people wanted Ben Simmons.
Well, here's my last thing. If I told you that he is he being Ben, and I think it's still a too small of a sample, but he literally is the only guy ever average 16, 8, and 8. Right now, he is the only guy. That's not Oscar. That's not Magic. That's not LeBron. I'm just telling you. You're asking for transcendent.
I'm hearing you on
the other thing. I mean, that's a pretty telling. Yeah, it doesn't look traditional, is all I'm saying.
Sorry, and I agree with you, but here's what I'll end with, and I'll let you go.
Yes,
a transcendent player is the best player on a team that wins multiple championships, and I don't think Ben Simmons can ever be the Batman on a team that wins multiple championships. And if you're not the Batman on a team that's memorable, you're not transcendent.
All right, that's fine. I'm going to look up transcendent. I appreciate the phone call, Tom. To me, that he's changing how that position is played would be how I would put it. Now, I personally don't think you can do it when you shoot, you know, less than 60% at the foul line. And I also think you need to be a more well-balanced basketball player at the offensive end, being able to take shots from different places on the floor. I would say that. But to say that he is unique at his position, for sure. And he's not going to be the best that wins the championship, because if he stays here, Embiid is still the most dominant player on this team, hands down. I mean, just no two ways about it. Now, what I would like to see is how can they both play at dominant levels in the same games? That's what I'd like to see. Because if you did that, I mean, that's so unique in terms of your top two guys. And I think it's possible, but it takes some real doing from a creative standpoint, from your coaching staff, a willingness on the part of them and their teammates. You know, you can't alienate the teammates to make it happen. But I think they do have a uniqueness to what they are capable of doing. And I think, you know, if you put Ben in certain situations, there really is a lot of people who have heart. I'm really interested tonight in seeing, because I know Nick Nurse is a good defensive coach. And he has definitely come up with ways to make Ben look invisible and give Embiid fits. But if I'm Ben Simmons and I'm coming off that game last night, I mean, I want to show that this is not a fluke. This was not just because the Cavs were so horrific. I want people to know it's because he decided to be that aggressive. He decided to be assertive Ben Simmons. That's what I want. Let's check in with Dean in Mount Airy. Dean, thanks for calling 97.5 The Fanatic.
What's going on, Dean?
I gotta
disagree with the last caller about transcending positions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Everybody, why are you comparing this man to everybody? Everybody gets compared to somebody.
To somebody, for sure.
And it's always like the bigger names like Kobe or the LeBron
Jordan.
And stuff like that. Jordan.
Yeah.
Now, nobody says that it took time for them to develop. I mean, would Michael Jordan have won, as great as Michael Jordan was, did he exceed without Scottie Pippen and guys like Horace Grant and them?
Right. It's definitely it's a team game for sure.
So these guys have to get out of that mold and thinking that you have to be a Superman on the court. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand that it becomes conversation. All right, so we make sure we're on the same page with what Tom was saying, transcendent. Beyond or above the range of normal or merely physical human experience.
Okay, can I answer that?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a 6'9" guard that plays outstanding defense?
I mean, I was trying to point out, Dean, the things that I said. If he makes all defensive team, there's only five people on it. He's probably right now he would make it.
But Magic was 6'9", and all the phenomenal things that Magic did, Magic couldn't shoot as well as players that we're comparing.
Magic, you know, couldn't shoot as well.
He couldn't shoot like he his shots weren't as confident as you compare to a superstar player.
Uh,
you know
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we think of him as a pass-first guy.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is the same thing with Ben.
Yeah.
Ben is letting his game slowly come together.
I would agree. I think it's slower than people want, and he's a little defiant in doing it. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, he has his own mind, a style that he wants to play.
That is true.
And then people are rushing him. They're trying to micromake him a grand all star. I mean, a star all star on his team. I want him to be who he is. Because that's when you get the best effort out of anybody.
Yep, that's true. It's play within who you are. I agree.
Play with continually, gradually work every year to get better.
That's where it lies, Dean. There's a couple areas where if you're trying to work to be better every year, well, I'm with you all 100%. But when the free throws haven't improved and the shooting hasn't taken place, not even making them, just take them, take a few. And that's where the frustration has happened for others.
Well, can you say this? He took like, what, two three pointers this year?
Yes.
And people were ecstatic. Let him play his game and let him grow into shooting the ball.
All right.
He's a team first guy.
I hear you, Dean.
Most guys are selfish.
I appreciate the phone call, Dean. Yes, he is a team first guy. But then you also have to do what your team needs you to do at times, too. 610-632-0975 at Sixers and Raptors tonight right here on 97.5 The Fanatic at 6 o'clock. You can weigh in on your versions of Ben. Is he transcendent? Should he just be allowed to be whoever that Ben is? Whoever Ben thinks is the best Ben. 610-632-0975. D-Line, I'm with you here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey! 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 Sunday afternoon here in the Delaware Valley on December 8th. Sixers and Raptors coming up. Really the only game in town today, but the Eagles are preparing for Monday Night Football, Eagles-Giants tomorrow night. They'll look to get back on track and begin what they hope will be run the table against four teams in their division, twice the Giants, and then, of course, Washington and Dallas. But that'll be tomorrow night. Tonight, it is the Sixers and the Raptors. The Raptors come to town. Now, they were here waiting last night while the Sixers were playing the Cavaliers, though, as Brett Brown said after the game, the win last night, where his team put up 141 points. Woo! That the minutes were so minimal for everybody that would not impact tonight at all in terms of it being a back-to-back. Plus, Joel Embiid will play, and he did not play at all last night. And he definitely will be coming with a point to make because he was 0 for 11 the last time he saw this team, which was November 25th. It was north of the border. He was also 0 of 3 at the line, and he was scoreless in 32 minutes of work. The Raptors come to town having lost two in a row. Their most recent loss was at home to the Houston Rockets. And in that game, the Raptors shot just 31% from three, 43 overall. They scored 109 points and gave up 119. And in that game, Russell Westbrook had a triple-double. So we'll see what happens. It'll be an interesting game for sure. And especially given the way the Sixers played, there were so many good things that to come out of their game last night, albeit against a team that is really, really struggling. Just 5 wins and 17 losses for the Cleveland Cavaliers. But you cannot take away the fact that they shared the ball for 43 assists. They only turned it over 8 times. That was a season low. Ben Simmons had a career high 34 points on 12 of 14 shooting. He also went to the line and made 9 of 12 free throws. And I'm trying to think. Those are the biggest ones to me that came out of last night. But this will be a larger challenge. Let's go back to the phone. 610-632-0975. We check in with Joe in New Jersey. Joe, thanks for calling 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hi, Ellen. How are you?
I'm good.
I just had one thing from watching yesterday's game. Seems like Ben Simmons has been, throughout like his first couple years here, has been so much better the faster the Sixers have played.
That is a good, excellent point.
And especially when his rookie year, when Embiid got injured, they won like 16 straight. And it seems like Embiid's the exact opposite and likes to play at a slower pace, obviously because he's a post-up guy and all, but it just seems like, it's not saying can't work between them because they're both great players.
Right.
But it seems like their games don't fit together very well.
Well, it is a conversation that certainly came up last night because of the speed that they were able to play with. And it is excellent point because instead of calling it the Ben and Joel, they kind of now say, well, it's, we play one way when Al Horford's out there and we play another way when Joel's out there, which you and I both can translate it. It's really Simmons and Horford running. And when Embiid's out there, we're going to wait for him and going to try to get him the ball. Now, as Brett said before the game, believe me, I don't want to get this confused with because he loves to run, but he doesn't want that to be mistaken for him not wanting Joel Embiid out there, because Embiid in the NBA is the number one guy in terms of points scored per possession. I mean, that he just is that dominant of a scorer. So it is, you bring up a very good point, Joe. It is definitely a little bit of a problem because it is two very different styles. My only thing is, why can we just not shift it into gears when we identify who's out on the court at any given time? Because we've seen people, and this isn't exactly how they do this now, but I've seen teams in years past where they have like a bench unit, right? There are different nicknames for the really good ones through the years. And that bench would play totally different than what a starting five unit would play in style, pace, the whole thing. So I would hope that eventually these guys could identify that, you know, at every opportunity when Embiid is on the bench, that we're going to really push the pace and Ben should be out there. And then I would hope occasionally over time, Joel would get back to, because when he was in his younger, like early years, maybe 2 years ago, he still ran the floor a lot more than he runs it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he could probably get to a place where he might need to lose a little more weight for that, because I think he is a little thick in the lower part of his body. But I would hope that they could find a happy medium.
Yeah, almost like when they had the Euro ball.
Yeah.
Like, that seems to fit Ben Simmons perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you can get a couple of those guys at the buyout or make a couple.
You mean like the Bellinellis and the Ersons?
Yeah.
Yep.
I think Brett Brown was calling that Euro ball because all European guys, which is kind of funny. But I think that fits Simmons so well because he could just run and hit them up.
And hit spacers, yep.
It seemed perfect. And I like your idea that when Embiid's in, you could slow it down, and Simmons in the bench unit could run it fast because then you got both two different styles of play.
Yeah, and allow them to identify with it. I mean, that's really what I say. You know, just boom. As soon as you know he's not on the floor, you should look like you looked last night. And if that's, you know, now he is going to play probably 32, 33 minutes, so that's fine. It gives you 15 minutes of, you know, let's just really push the pace.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, good identification, definitely. Do you think Ben takes a three today?
I mean, I'm not sure, but I just hope he keeps shooting, because if he misses, it's okay.
I don't mind. He only missed two. I'm not a big fan of his, like, fadeaway jumper that he's kind of fallen in love with, but... He made a couple of them yesterday.
Yeah.
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 All right, Joe. We'll see what happens. Thanks for taking the time to make a phone call to us. And thanks for calling 97.5 The Fanatic. I might have put that in the wrong... Tyler, I might have hung that up wrong. Double check me. 610-632-0975. Zane, we're coming back to you. I want to give you your full time. You'll kick us off in the 4 o'clock hour. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.